All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Wednesday, May 16th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
Doug Norrie.
Oh, it got me confused. I'm Doug Norrie, dude. It's going to confuse everyone if everyone thinks there's two Doug Norries in the podcast.
Doug Norrie, though.
There is another Doug Norrie out there. He's a race car driver. And there's actually one more. I think he lives in Australia. He emailed me once. There's like three of us in the whole world. So there are other Doug Norries, but I'm probably the most famous one of them all. We're from Daily Fantasy.
Yeah, underrated to be the most famous person with your name. I will never get there as James Davis, unfortunately. It's just the guy who wrote Garfield is just always going to have my number.
It's a tough cross to bear, I'll tell you. I got to do a lot to live up to the rest of the...
All the little Doug Norries like looking up to you, Googling.
Yeah, you're carrying all the other Doug Norries water for the time in memoriam. Okay, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com for short. Go and check out a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by Optimal Labs, by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal Labs for FanDuel and DraftKings. MLB, NBA, while the season still trucks along, though the Cavs are probably going to cut that pretty short pretty soon here. Although, I guess more of the Celtics taking care of them. And then football, when it comes around, all covered in the one subscription package. We don't section it off by site or provider or who wrote the articles. If we put it up on our site, you get it free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month. You're all good to go. Double slate of baseball today. And I actually want to talk, we'll kind of break it down. We'll go early slate, and we're going to include the 340 games on the early slate, even though I know FanDuel has it sectioned off by 12:05, and then they kind of do like a turbo thing. But we'll just kind of cover anything before 7 o'clock on the early slate of games. But I want to ask you a question. We talked about this, I think, this year. Sometimes I get confused about what we talk about one season to the next. But weather. So weather in baseball, to me, seems at times almost like if I'm thinking about like our reactions or the way we kind of treat things moving into lineup lock, especially last night, it kind of felt almost basketball-esque in waiting for weather news, because it was like, how bad is the rain going to be on the East Coast? Rain was basically affecting nearly every game from, I don't know, Maryland north on the East Coast, but from two different levels. And it kind of turned out in the end, it was like, we probably have to fade the Philly-Baltimore game completely, and it kind of felt like a scramble. How do you feel? I mean, do you feel that way about weather in basketball? Is that like the closest? Weather in baseball, is that like the closest equivalent of very last-minute decisions that we have in baseball, where typically information is, I don't know, it's not completely set, but close to being set well in advance of the time to line up lock. But like, how do you view weather? Like, what's your process for weather? And you know, what are the things like? What does it need to be to completely like X a game out, I guess, would be that was the kind of decision we were trying to make last night.
Yeah, weather, I think, is the hardest part about baseball in some ways, because I mean, oftentimes you'll get bad weather and games don't matter that much, or games that are pretty interchangeable. Just a game where you have like one guy in your batting lineup, in which case, sure, just make a decision either way. It probably doesn't even matter that much. You can typically just err on the side of safety there. It does get trickier when you're talking about, say, the best overall starting pitcher on a given slate, or you know, your pitcher too on DraftKings or something like that. And I think for that, I don't know, like, it's important to understand that not all weather is created equally, and weather doesn't affect hitters and pitchers in the same fashion. And so, you know, Kevin Roth actually on Twitter is just a great guy to go to for this, because he's someone who understands both weather and DFS. And oftentimes he'll have pretty good takes here, like, hey, this game is going to start late, but once it starts, it's clear skies, right? So in that case, you wouldn't be worried about the pitcher. If it was, hey, they're going to try to get this game in, but it looks like a system might come through and cause, you know, an hour or two delay in the middle, but the talk is that they're really dedicated to get this game in. Well, that would be a case where you could play the hitters, but you wouldn't want to play the pitchers, right? So you really have to read the tea leaves a little bit, figure out when the delay is going to happen. Will it be frequent? Will it be ongoing? And then from there, try to figure out, obviously, if the game is going to play at all. Early cancellations are death as well. I mean, we talk often about, like, if you think about the importance of batting order in the lineup, which everyone in DFS baseball now understands, and then understand that a game getting canceled a few innings early is like a lock for a full minus one or plus plate appearances. Like, that's a colossal disaster when you're trying to build a cash game lineup. So I think erring on, like, whenever there's any buzz of this has some postponement risk, I think it's just fine to walk away from it, basically, unless the payoff is too great. Like, it's the Coors game on a day with a lot of good pitching or something like that. But yeah, by and large, I try to play it pretty conservatively, but also try to understand that, you know, play it even more conservatively with my pitching and, you know, kind of on the spectrum, grading it down for hitters, you know, fewer hitters, less important hitters, and so forth.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. You know, you mentioned Kevin Roth. Mark Paquette on Twitter is excellent too. He wrote for us for a while and now works for another outfit. And I would say it if I could remember off the top of my head. It's not, I'm not trying to avoid it. We're obviously, you know, promoting guys that work for other outfits. But if you give good information, then you give good information, and that's kind of all we're looking for in this case. So there are a couple really good weather guys, and that was the case with Syndergaard last night, where it was like, okay, he's the pitcher. He's one of the best values on the slate. The game's starting in an early delay. It's going to be delayed early. That's great because they're just going to play it afterwards, and we need to not worry about him headed to the locker room. So I think that it's a nuanced approach. It takes. I'm less conservative than you because I don't know. I feel like often the games just play. I don't really have good hard numbers on that, but like more often than not, the games just get in enough innings. So it's actually funny too because baseball is so crazy. Like we had a lot of Philly guys in our lineups last night. And the lineup where the three Philly guys got the game got postponed, the lineup still cashed on DraftKings because that's just kind of how baseball works. Also, like you can just absorb zeros from guys at times, like just because it's the nature of the game. So yeah, weather. I don't often feel. I mentioned it too because today actually weather's going to play a big part of it. Again, it looks like there's rain in the forecast in Baltimore. There's rain in the forecast in Pittsburgh. There's a lot of rain in New York. So and these games are all on the early slate, and it's going to require. Up to the minute sort of looking at it. And if you go over to our chat room, we're always discussing sort of, you know, us and all the users are discussing, you know, what our thoughts are going into the game. That's another feature you get when you sign up for dfsr.com. Let's talk about this early slate. We'll kind of let's just assume weather neutral at this point, only because we're still 3 hours away from game time and lots can change. So we'll just go into this assuming that every game is going to play and because we're just not going to be able to get as nuanced this early in the game. But where are we looking for pitching early on? Oh, actually, one more thing. My wife is so confused that why there are even rainouts in baseball. Like, she's like, every other sport plays in the rain. Like, why is this the one sport that you even that even matters? Why can't they go out and just get a little wet? So it's like, it's kind of hard to come up with a good reason why. Anyway, where do we stand with pitching on this early slate? There's a lot of big arms going in the evening. This early slate doesn't strike me as having the kind of like ace level, just kind of starting pitching power. Where do you think we can turn to in cash games? Again, assuming that weather is not an issue.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky for me. I'll say like on first glance, I'm not a huge fan of the early slate. I think the obvious pitching play is probably J.A. Happ, but I really wonder if he's just been sort of a paper tiger this season. Like the K's have been there. Obviously, it's been a little bit rougher sledding in the last couple starts. He still is plagued by some of the issues that have caused him problems in the past, like giving up a lot of home runs. And, you know, this early in the season, it doesn't take a whole lot to, like, throw off that K per nine. So, like, I mean, for him, it was five straight starts with eight or more Ks. And, like, that's really, really good. But three Ks now in back-to-back starts? I don't know. But, I mean, if you look at the Vegas lines and the implied totals from those games, they have him as giving up by far the fewest runs of any starter on this slate, right? And he's still very affordable. So, I don't know. I mean, I'll kick it back to you. Is he the obvious chalk pitcher on FanDuel, or is there another direction we can go? Because as you're looking at some of these other names, like not a lot of these guys really inspire a ton of confidence.
Well, the good news for him, so I agree with you. I do not think those Ks are sustainable. Like if you look at his, there's nothing else that's really changed about his pitching profile. I looked at this 3 games ago because I was trying to make a determination sort of in the Garrett Cole line of thinking of like whether we wanted to make a change to his baseline projection because he had gone something like 5 games with striking out way more guys than he'd ever struck out in his entire career. And I just decided not to because there was nothing that to me that pointed to any real fundamental change in his approach. And when that's the case, you really can't just predict that someone's now going to just start striking out 3 more guys per 9 or whatever it's going to be than he had for the rest of his career. And lo and behold, it kind of worked out. It doesn't always work out like that with making that kind of judgment. So that's a long way to say I do not trust this. And he's probably still the best pitcher on the slate, right? The Mets are so bad against lefties. 26% K rate. They're dead last in the league in WOBA by a large margin, too, against lefties this season. their WOBA is 16 points lower than the next high than the next team. So he gets a gift of a matchup here. They have a couple guys in the lineup that are troublesome to lefties, like Flores, even like Mesoraco is an improvement over what they had. But like these aren't. Really, it's not like guys you're scared.
Those are not the names that you go like, oh, never mind. Yeah, it's like Josh Donaldson,
Jose Bautista, Paul Goldschmidt, J.D. Martina, like their peak trend. Right, guys like that. So this is all to say I fall somewhere in the middle with Hap in terms of I don't want to trust the K stuff, and if there's going to be a team you can dial it up again, back up against, this is definitely the one. So even at his baseline projection, which we have him for, which is somewhere around 8.5 to 8.75 Ks per nine, something like that. I think that's where we landed on him. Even with that projection, he's probably the chalk pitcher just because of the money line and the matchup. And like I said, there's, unfortunately, there might be some weather concerns there. Now, though, if you wanted to pivot off him, I mean, do you have Jameson Taillon's on there? Do you like him? There's like him, the other guys that are probably, we talked a little bit about Pivetta. The other guys are like Pivetta, Taillon, and then on FanDuel, at least, Trevor Bauer is 9,300. Trevor Bauer is extremely expensive on DraftKings. He's 12.8, so I'm going to stop even before we get started on that. He's way too expensive for him. But, like, of those three guys, do you, on FanDuel or then maybe starting pitcher two, is there anyone that kind of stands out to you as possibly feeling comfortable with?
I mean, I'm terrified to play Jameson Taillon in cash right now, to be honest with you. Like, last game, he goes out there just three innings. He was really good, 5 Ks, one walk, one hit, but only faced 11 batters and got pulled. Yep. The innings pitched have been a real problem for him all season. I mean, two of those games were just colossal, just dumpstery starts where he gave up 5 runs in 1 2/3 and 7 3 2/3 and back-to-back starts in April. But outside of that, basically he has one game, this 9-inning game, the complete game against Cincinnati where he threw a one-hitter, which is obviously tremendous. Outside of that, it's been very few starts you'd be happy with at all. And so, you know, he's cheap now in DraftKings. Maybe you can consider him for a pitch or two. Again, like, it's just a pretty tough landscape for pitching in general on DraftKings if you want to get outside the pitcher one slot. And even, like I said, you know, I don't necessarily trust Hap that much either. But yeah, that's like really the only place I would consider him. I wouldn't think twice. I wouldn't think for a second about playing him on FanDuel too.
One thing about that last start, he had a cut in his finger. I looked this up the other day, or last night when I was writing the picks. He did have a cut in his finger. So it was like, it wasn't so much a performance-based thing as he just got pulled. He got pulled early. Now, one thing that I'm going to probably take back my Bauer thing a little bit here, only because I'm realizing that one thing that's driving down his projection in our system is I believe we have no money line in on the game right now. And then when that's the case, that drives the run because it basically gets set to a default, which is to say, like, I think our default is something like the over-under is 8, the home team is like a minus 105 or something. I can't remember the exact settings, but it's like, it's a very just vanilla projection. So I think that that's probably one thing that is driving down Bauer's projection. Bauer's going to look a lot better in our system when that comes in. That being said, Taillon, there's also no line on the Pittsburgh game for some reason right now. And I kind of had noticed that one and not noticed the Bauer one. My guess is that Taillon comes in somewhere at like minus 140. My guess is Bauer probably comes in at something like minus 200. So I think when that sorts itself out, I think, you know, so we see Bauer at a minus 200. Do you, you know, this is a Detroit team that's now without Miggy. They were a bad offense anyway, and very righty heavy, and now they don't have Cabrera. Would you change your mind here, knowing that Bauer, you know, striking out 10 per 9, this is now carried over second season, walks are up a little bit. Would that sway you back maybe to playing him, at least on FanDuel at 9,300? 12.8 on DraftKings, again, very expensive. Would that change your mind a little bit on maybe switching him into the cash game discussion?
No, I like him on FanDuel quite a bit. Hopefully I didn't make it seem like Hap was like the only choice on FanDuel. I just mostly didn't want to play Taillon there. Yeah, I think Bauer's totally playable. I mean, the big question mark I suppose I have for him is we had multiple seasons of him going about 5.5 innings per start. Like, that's exactly what he did in 2014, 2015. 2016 is kind of odd to figure out because he had came out of the bullpen for a bit. That's what he did last year. This year he's up to 6.5 innings per start. I just don't really trust that that's sustainable, I don't think. I just want to see more of it just because the walks are so egregious that it's hard to just picture, you know, walking 3.7 guys per nine, but being able to go that deep into games. So when that comes back down to earth a little bit and he goes a little bit more north to that, you know, around 300 BABIP that's there for his career, I think that you'll see shorter starts out of him. And that's not necessarily a showstopper or anything. Like, you could still play him on a slate with terrible pitching. It's just that I don't think the picture is quite as rosy as it appears based on this year's stats.
Yeah, there's some concerning numbers with Bauer, right? Like, he's running good on BABIP, so it's like 20 points off, better than his career average. He's running great on home runs. His home run to fly ball ratio for his career is something like 12%, and right now it's at 6.5%. So you have to figure, not only are more balls going to land in play, but more balls are also going to leave the ballpark. And if the walks are already a little bit of a concern because they're trending the wrong direction for him, that this 3 ERA is simply not sustainable. He's probably more like the true 4 ERA guy that he's been for his career, right? Like, so if you look at this, if you look at his 3 ERA and say, oh, he's kind of turned something around, he has not turned anything around. He's gotten very lucky this season, and I think that we are probably looking, now Detroit, again, Detroit's a good matchup, so this is where you can you can still roster him even on his career sort of numbers. But it'll be interesting to see where the money line ends up falling on that game. Let's get to a couple of the stacks here for the early games. It was funny because I wrote up Happ as a pitcher, and then I also wrote up like possibly the Mets as a stack. Like I wrote up like Mesoraca and Wilmer Flores just because they're very good against lefties. Do you think it's like intellectually dishonest to do something like that? Like I kind of tried to explain it in the article by saying DFS can sometimes go both ways. Is it reasonable to consider like maybe stacking to the Mets even though they don't draw the best matchup here in the world?
Yeah, because mostly it's a price thing, right? Like it's not the best matchup in the world, but if you can get Flores for $2,500, like the price, the opposing pitcher, as long as it's not like Kershaw on a slate like this, is going to be almost neither here nor there. And I think that's really where a lot of that comes from. Like, you know, if these guys were expensive, if Happ were even better, like those would be some reasons to not play him. But I think going against a guy like Happ, like I find him more to be like a league average type pitcher, maybe a little bit better than that. And so for that reason, no, I wouldn't shy away from it. Because the thing about it too is that on a slate like this, somebody has to be the best pitcher. It doesn't actually have to be a good pitcher though. Right. So like when you look at some of these names and some of these matchups, you have like Bartolo Colon versus yet to be decided, Matt Harvey and Andrew Suarez, Brandon Woodruff and Matt Cook. Coach.
Whoa, hey-o. Explicit tag.
I'm trying to pronounce his name. This is not a time to be immature. Thank you. Miles Mikolas versus Lance Lynn. You know, like the list goes on, and you have a lot of high totals here. Not a lot of scary pitchers. You know, Tampa Bay, Kansas City features two guys with a 5 ERA or higher. Like, yeah, I think basically there's just a lot of bad pitchers going today. And so being among the top two guys is nothing to write home about, is what I'm trying to say. So I think it's fine to play those guys too.
So where would you land on one of these teams? I mean, like, so you mentioned a lot of guys. Is there one you want to kind of pick out as the one that we can definitively stack? I wasn't throwing the Mets out as the top stack. I was more just kind of trying to explain sometimes the thought process can go both ways in DFS. But is there a team, knowing that there are so many bad arms going on this early slate, is there a team that does stand out to you?
There is, and I actually have a question here, and this is going to be very important to try to suss out. Revenge games. So,
not real. Move on.
Why are you laughing? No, this is serious. This is a serious question, so please don't laugh at me. Okay. Revenge games. Do you think the Cardinals will be out to get revenge against Lance Lynn? So this is the thing I can never figure out. Or is Lance Lynn going to get revenge against the Twins? So this is actually what I can't figure out in all seriousness. Because, like, presumably the Cardinals, like Lance Lynn leaves, aren't they also just like, F that guy? Like, we're going to go out there and just hit that guy around. But why is it always that the guy coming back and facing the team, they're like, Oladipo's going back to play the Magic. That's a lot of bad blood. Don't they also hate him? Won't they like try hard to stop him too? Like, I can't figure out why he just comes in and everyone's like, it's like really awkward. Like, they just got caught cheating on, you know, like they're walking in and they're cheating on the guy's wife. And they're like, oh no, like this guy's going to be angry. He's going to, like, shouldn't they all just hate each other and have it cancel out?
See, buddy, this is why you'll never understand the nuance in the revenge game, right? If I can't really explain it to you, it's like, you know, a great player trying to explain how to play to a bad player. Like, if you don't understand the revenge game piece. Like,
yeah, if I can't see it already, you can't show it to me. I got you. So anyway, Lance Lynn this season, taking a step back, the big control has been simply abominable. I mean, 6.55 walks per nine. You have to think with the blood pumping in this revenge game that's not going to help things any either. Giving up a ton of home runs, building off last year's campaign where he had a career high by far, 1.3 home runs allowed per nine, 1.6 home runs allowed per nine this year. The xFIP is nothing like the 7.3 ERA, but I think it's the lines overall are bad enough that you can still probably trust that the Cards are going to be a pretty reasonable stack. One thing that's kind of crazy about Lance Lynn is, and you know, just like I said, somebody has to be the best pitcher on a bad slate. Somebody also has to be the luckiest guy in certain categories. And I really think, like, looking back the last three seasons, Lance Lynn depressed home run to fly ball rate in a way that you simply don't see from a guy who's not super sinker heavy. Like, 3 years straight, he averaged 8% or less on home runs to fly ball. And it looked like that was like kind of who he was. And so he was running these ERAs way ahead of his xFIP and then basically just gives it all back, all those gains in the last 2 years. Like, just now averaging 17%. And prior to that, it was around 10 and 11. So I think he's probably just like everyone else, gives up around 11, 12% of home runs on fly balls. And he's just not a very good pitcher. So Cardinals cheap, great stack.
I think that they're going to probably be the most popular stack. I wrote up Carpenter, Pham. Yeah, I got to tell you, Tommy Pham. I guess I, had known this and not realized that Tommy Pham is like, he's awesome. He's now continuing his second straight season of mid 900s OPS. He steals a lot of bases. He's among the, sometimes I tend to not notice this as much because you notice this more if you play season long fantasy baseball, which we've trended away from. And we kind of just trust our preseason projections on guys to the point where, to me, it doesn't always pay unless you're actually like writing a guy up. It doesn't always pay to just look at what they're actually doing in the season because rarely will you change anything. So just trying to explain why this is not something I all the time look at, and we could debate about whether that's correct or not. But yeah, man, he's continued his second straight season of a mid 900s OPS. The guy's just, I mean, trending towards superstar category if he's just not already there. Ozuna has struggled this year. There's a lot of reasons I think that it's going to turn around and you're getting him at the depressed price point. All this being said, they are definitely the stack. And then kind of take a look at if they start Jorko or DeJong, because they both make for nice shortstop plays at a position that's it could be a little tough to find shortstops, especially on FanDuel when there's no multi-position eligibility. I don't mind the Twins in this spot either. There are not as much weather concerns there, but going the other way against Mikolas, mostly because he's just not a huge strikeout guy. And it doesn't pay to always just look at a guy and say, he's expensive on DraftKings, that must mean he's good. Or he's got some wins, that must mean he's good. Like, he doesn't walk anybody, but he's under 7K per nine. These guys tend to struggle. Like, it hasn't really worked for him. It hasn't really worked against them yet, but it's really hard to be a low threes xFIP or ERA guy when you strike out less than seven guys per nine, because it just, your margins are so, so very thin on what you can get away with. So I actually don't mind the Twins going the other way, and especially if we're talking about possible weather concerns.
Yeah, and if you're thinking about upside too, like, you know, a guy like Brian Dozier, who, you know, kind of struggles with the K sometimes, but when you can take that off the table a little bit, you can get some serious upside. I really like him today. Not an auto X for me, I don't think.
The auto X is another trigger word for me.
I'm not going to be auto. I will not be auto Xing him in any capacity.
Hit us with a sponsor, and then we'll get into the evening slate of games.
Sure, let's talk about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime is a great place to go to play a totally untraditional type of daily fantasy sports. Basically, you can go in there and you just take one-on-one fantasy sports heads-up challenges. So you can pick a guy like Brian Dozier that you believe in today, put him up against Tommy Pham, old run-hot Tommy Pham, as they call him, and and just see what happens. There's no salary caps to worry about, none of that stuff. So you just go in there. You can also just cruise through all the challenges all the other users have issued out to the world and see what suits your fancy. Issue a challenge for any amount, any player in all the major sports. So it's a great place to go. If you don't want to just put in all that time grinding out the lineup block with us prior to lineup block, which we do every single night. So check them out, nohalftime.com. Download the app, use promo code DFSR to get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit.
All right, let's hit this evening slate of games. Totally opposite. I mean, we have only five games starting at 7 o'clock Eastern, and all the good pitchers. I mean, could we put one of these guys on the early slate to make things, I mean, spread them out from like to a 1 o'clock and a 3 o'clock game between Scherzer, Sale, Verlander? All of them are piled in here. And there's actually some other mid-range guys here too. But Scherzer, Sale, and Verlander all go in the evening on what's already a short slate. So I think we can probably start there about trying to decide which of these three, one on FanDuel, do we prefer? And then, I mean, is there a possibility of even rostering two of them on DraftKings at their price points? But if you had to just choose, they're right all around the same price. So I don't think we need to worry too much about saving a buck here, a buck there. We're just basically going to choose the guy that we think has the best chance to score the most fantasy points in this case. Is there a guy that stands out to you among this group as the cash game play? Or is it one of these things where we maybe want to spread it around? Who do you see between these big three?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's also just razor thin in our system right now, trying to pick between Scherzer and Sale. Right now, we have Scherzer at 3.99 points per dollar, and we have Sale at 3.96 points per dollar, and they're roughly the same price. So, you know, it's just basically slightly leaning in Scherzer's direction, which, you know, winds up putting him in 100% of lineups, just because it's basically saying Sale is the same pitcher, but only a hair worse. I'm not sure I totally love that, like, just from the eyeball test, just to be honest with you, because if you look at them, particularly just based on the matchups today, Scherzer has a hell of a matchup with the Yankees. Like, they have a 341 WOBA against right-handed pitching this season, and then you compare that against Sale's matchup with the Athletics, who have a 320 WOBA against left-handed pitching. And now some of that is going to be that the Yankees strike out a little bit more righties than the A's do against lefties, but man, nonetheless, like, it's a it, that's close enough to me to where I would probably just want to lean Sale, simply because I think his floor is going to be a little bit higher than Scherzer's today.
Yep, I agree with you. That's exactly what it is. Right now, our base projection lineup for the Yankees comes in as striking out 10% more than league average. So that's just only factoring the strikeouts part of it, right? And this is on their historical splits against righties as well. And then Oakland, right, we have them somewhere around 3.5%. So if you're getting six extra... And by the way, that's barely enough to make up the difference in the difference in run line, or excuse me, in money lines, because Sale is getting a big boost on a -250 or 260 money line, where Scherzer's sitting somewhere like around -150, 160, something like that. I think in the end, it's going to end up being Sale. I think by just because of what you said, just based on the matchup, based on where the money line lands. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Washington's -160, Sale and Red Sox -263. I think once all those things are taken fully into account and the lines all settle in and we have the lineups, I think we are going to see Sale. And it is still very close. And I think that he probably ends up being the chalk play pitcher. Because when you look at their numbers, I mean, Sale has just still been just amazing. 12 strikeouts per nine, doesn't walk anybody. XFIP and ERA both right in line with what he did last season. Scherzer is right there too, so it's not like any big difference. I think just those underlying
factors. They're basically
just
the same pitchers. I mean, they went, yeah, one went 9 starts, 58 innings. The other went 9 starts, 58 and 2/3 innings. Scherzer has a few more Ks, but I don't think you can really pencil him in for the 2K jump up to 14 this season, just because he's not a Aroldis Chapman. You know, like, you can't, right, just do that as a starter by and large, unless you're just going to be setting like world records and stuff. So I think they're basically the same pitcher in my mind. And when they're the same pitcher, I'd prefer the better matchup. So I don't know. It's good, but it's tough to make heads or tails of. I mean, certainly Scherzer, it wouldn't be out of the question for him to just have an outlier K season. The guy's never had below 10 Ks per nine since 2012, right? So, like, he's just an absurdly great K guy. But yeah, with a gun to my head right now, I'd just rather take Sale.
And by the way, Verlander falls behind both of those other factors. So he has the worst money line of the three and the worst matchup of the three against the Angels. Right. In terms of strikeouts, the Yankees are a worse overall hitting matchup. But the strikeouts, that A's lineup, especially because they moved Ohtani into the second spot yesterday and hit Trout leadoff, if that's going to be the case going forward, it's just going to get even more difficult for pitchers against the Angels. I always get a little confused, but I know Ohtani takes the day off before he pitches, and I'm not totally keeping track of when that is. But if they're going to, for the days he plays, if he's going to hit second and Trout's going to hit first, that's a very, very difficult 1-2 for any pitcher to run through. So I think that's where Verlander comes in third among that group. Now, right now, if you run lineups on our site on DraftKings, you actually get both Scherzer and Sale. It says to spend all the money at pitching. Strikes me as something that's not going to change over the course of the day. It's going to feel a little weird paying 12-5 for Scherzer against the Yankees, I think. Just because it's the Yankees, and I get that all the numbers are probably correct in our system, and it's going to, because it just feels like there's a lot of downside there. If you wanted to pivot to someone cheaper, is there among this maybe Buehler, Caleb Smith, Garrett Richards group that falls in the next tier below and actually will allow you to pay up maybe for ups or some bats? Is anyone stand out to you among that group?
Well, yeah, so for starters, I don't know how much I need to pay up for bats today. Like, there are so many good pitchers going that there's basically one game that I could see people really wanting to target outside of the, I mean, you could take the Red Sox guys. They've got a huge money line today.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a second.
I know. I realize I stepped in that right. 1 second too late. And shout out to my dad hammering on the shed next door. It's nice when your dad's your next door neighbor. but there's basically one game that's a good money line game today for hitters, and that's the Chicago Atlanta game. And we're already getting like three Atlanta guys in that lineup. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just a simple man, Doug, but I'm not feeling like I'm really missing out on a ton of big bats today, because I'm probably not going to be able to play those Boston guys regardless. And I'm not sure I even want to, you know. So, I mean, yeah, you can consider guys like Walker Buehler. He's not that cheap based on his track record, in my opinion, like 8,500.
I don't know about that. I'm going to take exception to that, because I actually think Buehler's excellent. He's been awesome since he got called up. He's pitching.
He's got four starts. I mean, what do you want?
He's a top prospect. This is right in line with like the numbers that he had come through. He's a Dodgers number one prospect. He's 11 Ks per nine. The XFIP at 255. The only concern I'd had with him early was the pitch counts. That hasn't been a problem. They've been running enough toward 90 pitches, and he just gets the Marlins. I don't think I'm going to pivot off Scherzer. I think that the Scherzer Sale lineup will stick in our system, is my guess. I would not be shocked, though, if Buehler had higher ownership than Scherzer in this matchup, just because you're getting $4,000 less in a good matchup with a nice money line. So
I don't think it's unreasonable, but I guess like I think people should temper their enthusiasm on some level, because yeah, like he's got electric K numbers in the minors. Those have translated to the majors. Last year, though, pitching out of the bullpen, he had 7.7 walks per nine in his eight appearances, right? So, like, there's definitely red flags that suggest that he might not just come in and be this full-on ace. Also averaging just more than five innings per start. And a lot of that, you know, is because he strikes a lot of guys out, runs deep counts. He's going to walk a decent amount of guys. He's still really, really, really young. The big thing you like about him, I think, is just that the Marlins are so bad. So, like, he has that going for him, which is nice. But I think... there are a lot of factors pointing in his direction today, which is why I would consider playing him, not the least of which is that it's just such a small slate. But I would hope to not play him for his next start, probably, I would say.
And then, like I said, there could be weather concerns in Washington. Again, it's supposed to rain all day. That would be the other reason to pivot off, like we mentioned about pitching and weather. So keep an eye on that, because that would be, if there was going to be a tiebreaker on something like that, that could be the thing. Now, the other question I have here, and you kind of mentioned it before, is... The Red Sox run line, expected run line right now, so they're minus 260 with an 8 over-under, which puts them, for our system, right around like 5.05 implied runs for the day, which is a lot, and I believe that's the highest of the slate. It actually might even be, yeah, I think it is the highest of the slate. I think it's actually ahead of the Atlanta and Cubs game. Here it is, right, so those guys are both at 4.8. But they're facing Trevor Cahill. Trevor Cahill's been awesome this year. Like, Trevor Cahill... has put up, I just had it up and I put it down, but off the top of my head, he's like striking out somewhere like around 11 Ks per nine or something like that. The XFIP is like under 2.5. Does this feel weird to you? We base some of our projections on implied run lines because we think it's a nice way to just account for a lot of different factors. And I usually am trusting of it in the sense that I think it gives you a nice snapshot of what, you know, could happen in a baseball game. And this one just feels wrong to me. I mean, am I crazy to think about just maybe changing it? Like, I 5.1 runs against a very good pitcher just feels just crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't know if it's crazy. Okay, like, so just take the Red Sox on average this season. They've averaged 5.38 runs per game. So you're talking about a 6% reduction in the amount of average Red Sox scoring here. I don't think that sounds totally off the wall to account for Cahill. Like, should it be 20% less? I'm not totally sure. They're also at home, and Boston's a nice place for them to hit. So I can see a case for it. I think you wouldn't be insane to bet the under necessarily on five runs or something for them. But I don't think it's totally out of left field just based on the sheer number of runs they scored. This has actually been sort of an anomaly, or like a tough thing, I think, for people to wrap their mind around all season when it comes to like the Red Sox and the Yankees in particular, which is just that they're averaging so many runs per game that it's going to make money lines look weird. One incidental thing I saw when I was kind of researching this, do you know who scored the most runs in the NL this season?
The Braves?
Yeah, the Braves. 221 runs scored, a 56 yeah. run differential. I mean, that is wild for a team that, you know, nobody had these sort of expectations for them coming into this season. And if I can take Braves against Tyler Chatwood at significantly reduced prices, I'm going to take them over the Red Sox against Cahill any day. Now, that's not necessarily the choice you're making just because the price points are so different, but you can get a lot of pretty cheap Braves as a part of a pretty decent lineup here and run them out in cash, and I think you're going to feel a lot better about that than paying up for Red Sox guys in a game. And I think you've talked about this in the past. The scariest thing about going against Cahill is not whether he's, like, you know, good or bad. It's just that their starts where he'll just go out there and just strike out everyone, or get those, maybe he'll walk the bases loaded, but then strike everyone out. Like, it's going to be a very volatile game to target in general. And I think I'd just as soon take Atlanta.
I hate targeting cash game guys against anyone that can pick, that anyone that has big strikeout stuff, even if they're not the best pitcher in the world. Like, you know, Luis Castillo's of the world that can, like, actually strike guys out, even when they struggle with command. Because
all he needs to do is strike your guy out in the wrong spot, right?
Yeah, exactly. by the way, just got pinged by our other guy, Chris Durrell, mentioning that Tanaka and Gio are showing as the starters for Washington, New York today. But I think that's because that game is being, they're going to finish off the game from yesterday. So I just don't want people to be confused about who's actually starting. Because if you see,
yeah, Jarrell, don't get confused.
All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Go and check out the free trial of the site, DFSR.com/MLB. We'll get you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You'll be all set to go. Everything we offer on our site is covered under one subscription package. So don't worry about having it sectioned off by sport or provider or anything like that. DFSR.com/MLB. Get you started. Buddy, talk to you again Friday when we talk more baseball.
Peace.